The idea of this session was really to introduce the idea of the digital philatelic exhibition. For those of you who don't know, at the American Stamp Dealers Association mega event last October, there was the first digital philatelic exhibition where material was presented electronically. There were a series of laptops available for people to peruse the material. The digital philatelic studies were competitive. They were judged by a distinguished panel of three judges combining philatelic knowledge, computer knowledge. The judges were Bob Odenweller,
Kevin Doyle, and
Ross Toll. And I think it was an interesting experience for all three judges. I think they weren't quite sure what they'd let themselves in for, as indeed I don't think any of us had quite let out been aware of what we've let ourselves in for. Probably you're asking, well, what is this? Is this you just take your exhibit, you scan it, and people look at it electronically? The answer is no. The idea is that a digital philatelic study should represent a file or set of files which tell a philatelic story. Now, that, trying to draw analogies, is probably somewhere between an article, a piece in a journal, and a traditional philatelic exhibit. It really straddles the full spectrum. The idea is that the digital philatelic study should advance philatelic knowledge. It is not simply an attempt to regurgitate information simply in an electronic media. It really should be an attempt to further advance philatelic knowledge. One of the key ingredients in order to further that knowledge and research is that within a DPS, you do not necessarily have to own all of the material which you present. As indeed you would with an article or a piece of literature, you do, however, have to recognize copyright, ownership, and so on. And it is necessary to secure the appropriate permissions from the owner or the author to make use of their image or information. Exactly as you would in an article, you have to make the appropriate acknowledgements and secure the correct permissions. This year, we're going to repeat the exercise. It's the second attempt. The DPS will take place at the ASDA show in New York in October from the 14th to the 18th. Dr. Grabowski could actually do what I'm doing because he's taken over as the promotions officer for digital philatelic studies. He's actually going to be securing the assistance of the US Classic Society, the AAPE, and other organizations in promoting DPS as a new form of exhibitor. Now, I think one of the most important points to get across, and I know this is something that David feels very strongly on, a DPS is not just a scan of an exhibit, a traditional exhibit. It can be, you can do that, but that will not represent a good DPS. A good DPS will incorporate aspects of research, philatelic knowledge. It will, as I emphasized earlier, advance, we said, the collective knowledge about subjects. It will actually move knowledge forward. And it should also take full advantage of the medium. It should take advantage of the facilities that an electronic presentation allows you. You can do all sorts of things electronically that you can't do with a traditional mainstream 16-page one-frame exhibit or 8-frame, 8x16-page exhibit, where you simply move through in a linear fashion, you show either the front or the back of a cover, and it's really a very staid, very unimaginative presentation. With a DPS, you can do a lot of things. You can show information in all sorts of creative and imaginative ways. And that is an important part of assessing merits of a digital philatelic study. Now, I think to convey what a DPS is all about, I think David has brought along his first place award-winning exhibit from the ASDA show last year. And David is going to walk us through it and talk to us about his concept of DPS. David, along with Fran Adams and Bob Odenwell, are going to be the three judges for 2007. One of the things that we wanted to do was to retain one of the judges from 2006 to build upon and expand the collective experience so that Bob will be able to bring forward the benefits and the knowledge that he acquired in 2006. David, having been a first place award winner in 2006, also obviously brings forward a certain amount of experience and knowledge to 2007. So I think at this point, David, let me pass it over to you to walk us through.
You know, I'd like to say a few introductory comments too, though. Where exhibiting is going in the future, none of us know. And I was very much impressed a couple of years ago when I saw a picture of a cover on the front page of LIMS that had been in exhibition for 25 years. It was basically destroyed. We're all destroying our material by exhibiting it. The more you exhibit it, the more you're destroying it, because the light is just destroying covers, stamps, everything uniformly. So the big question is, where are we going to go in the future? And the idea that the guys in New York came up with to do these digital philatelic studies is a good one, and they're trying to find a niche right now, and so it is still a very dynamic field, I guess, if you will, that we're trying to fight our way through it. And as Colin said, I'm a computer weenie, okay? So I put a lot of value on the computerization of these presentations as well as the philatelic content. As Colin said, a traditional exhibit is a linear exhibit. Here it is, walk from here to there. I guess technically we call it random access because you could walk up to frame 5 and look at a page, but you'd have no context for that page. So I tried in this first pass to do something different, and Dr. Grabowski, we got the three top awards, and basically that was because we did something computer-wise. A lot of the people did just do PDF scans of their exhibits. Okay, Ed and I both did PowerPoint presentations, which allowed us to do a certain amount of hyperlink-type operations that would allow you to jump back and forth in the exhibit. Another platform for doing a good DPS would be HTML or XML web pages. Web pages are also very dynamic, and you can jump around and link back and forth, and we think that's what Fran in particular brings, since he's a big web page designer. Again, you've got to have, just like every exhibit, you have to tell the judges what it is you're going to do. The panel that gave me the grand award, in fact, didn't think that my exhibit was really very good in terms of absolutes, because it was too much like a catalog. Anyway, I try to say what I'm going to do exactly, and then say that I'm going to show all of my own material, and if I don't show my own material, it's going to be denoted by a special symbol, and I've talked about how I've scaled the covers and scaled the stamps and so forth, and how none of that is important.
Are you using JPEGs or GIFs or what?
It's generally JPEGs, but I'm using 300 DPI JPEGs because I have them for my hard writing. I mean, you could do, obviously, 96 DPI JPEGs for the screen. So that would give you, very small file sizes. And then I created some extra icons that would allow navigation through the software beyond what's available through the PowerPoint interface. So particularly, you see the last ones of viewing fronts and backs of covers. This is an example of how you can see all this stuff at once in nice color and high resolution. Then I give just some usual history of what was going on in the area of Slovenia. I'm not going to bore you with the philately of the Slovenian postage dues. Obviously, I want to show where Slovenia is and what some of the big towns are that we're going to see. And then the introduction here, I have 7 chapters, basically, and as you can see, these are all hyperlinks. So if you're not interested in stamps and you're only interested in postal history, you can go down and click on the postal history. Here we are.
David, how did it work? Did you leave a computer there, or did they have a computer there?
Yeah,
there are 8 laptops.
People can walk around.
People can walk up to, they have 8 laptops. It's permanently staffed with people to help people go through the exhibits, the studies. Literally, the laptops are there throughout the show. There is no email access on the laptops, otherwise you'd find people could just sitting there looking at their emails. But during the course of the show in 2006, they had several hundred people come up and actually look through the exhibits. Dr. Richard Maisel had a number of them do a study, questionnaire thing. He had 100 questionnaires which he analyzed. Some people spent, 4 or 5 minutes. Some people were up there for about 20 minutes. Some people looked at all the exhibits. Some people just sampled individual ones. Some people looked at the summary of the titles, found nothing of particular interest to them, and moved off.
See, it's much higher bandwidth to look at exhibits in this medium, obviously, because you would look at the table of contents of the master. You didn't say, I think there were 19 exhibits. There were 19 people that submitted exhibits.
And all of those were loaded on it.
All of those were loaded on the ASDA website, I believe. Okay. And then you would just call up whichever one you wanted. I assume there was a master index. I wasn't there, so I didn't see
it. Was that website accessible to people outside the show?
Yes.
So anybody
what happened,
in the world could have looked at those?
What was decided to do during the show itself, when the show was only available on the laptops at the exhibition, at the conclusion of the exhibition, the material was then transferred to the American Stamp Dealers Association website. So if you go to ASDA online, you can actually look at the exhibits. And for the participants in the show, the digital phototype studies were then loaded onto a CD, which was given to each of the individual participants.
Okay. Two CDs, I guess.
Is that still available on the website?
Still available on the website.
Okay, so people can click on see this pioneer work.
I view it that we're feeling our way.
And people can say, I can do that much better.
Well, more power to them. Like I say, there's going to be a bone of contention about how much software expertise is required.
Yeah.
But I would say that that's absolutely no different than the expertise needed to put an exhibit together physically.
Yeah.
But there are people that can't do it, and there are people that can do it, and that's life.
Well, if you look at the situation of what's happened, say, over the last 15 years, maybe 20 years, we've gone from a situation in traditional exhibiting where we've gone from handwritten quadrille pages to typewritten exhibits, to now computer word processed exhibits with different fonts and different colors. We've gone through black and white printers to color printers. I mean, we've really gone from ground zero with those handwritten pages to really now where the use of computers and computer software is universal in preparing traditional exhibits. I'm sure you'd agree with that, Fran. I mean, you've lived through the transition. You've seen it. It really has been a...
And the sad part of that, of course, is the APS claims, if you have a handwritten exhibit, there's no penalty for that. However, just like they say presentation is worth 5 points of your exhibit, we all know you have one chance to make a first impression. And if one has a sloppy-looking exhibit because of presentation, it reflects throughout the exhibit, whether it technically does or not. And, maybe handwritten exhibits are still legal, but if I was king of the universe, they wouldn't be. I'd say, tough. But that's another story. So anyway, we can navigate through here, and in my case, I was trying to present a complete, comprehensive study of the postage dues of this particular region of Yugoslavia. And so you see we have some tables and various usages like you would see in an exhibit.
So is this a PowerPoint?
Yeah, this is PowerPoint. And then if I want, I can go back to the table of contents at any time. I can go look at the stamps and what was going on. You can do these kinds of things where you're doing sequential revelation or overlays of graphics. So this makes your exhibit or study a lot more dynamic. Things that you couldn't possibly do in written text.
A lot of things you wouldn't ever want to do on your written exhibit.
Exactly. Are illegal. They don't, you're not supposed to do this.
Have all these neat effects. This is an example of sequential revelation. It happens that these are humongous sheets. I've never seen sheets bigger than the 750 that these postage dues were printed in. And all the values were printed in a single sheet. And this is an example of what's called sequential revelation, because I can go through and show different, highlight the different places and talk about how those sheets were printed. So, you know, this again, I just was feeling my way through this too, looking to see what some of the good things and examples of what we could do. Okay, so here's a position piece from the sheet, so you can highlight it at the same time that you show the piece. Now, that's funny. I discovered that there's not, that the PDF isn't perfectly portable. Those are his magnifying glasses. And that font didn't seem to come through.
There's a way to do that.
Yeah, well, there should be.
There he is.
To say embed the fonts or whatever, mm-hmm. Yeah, which I didn't do apparently. You know, you can do these animation things just to make it more interesting. So the viewer can actually, you know, interact with the program rather than just walking down the floor at the show looking at the frames. We're not particularly interested in what I'm doing here technically or philatelically as we are in just the presentation. So I'm not going to disagree with Bob Odenweller's assessment that these could go a lot further because he's looking at it as more... This is like a catalog presentation, let's call it. Even though I've done a lot of work of digging out proof material and varieties, it still is like a catalog. Whereas I did a paper recently at the beginning of last year on the Labuan inverted center postage due stamp, in which case we, working with Colin, we identified 33 copies of the stamp, of which I own one. So that would be an example. If I had taken that paper, and I have pictures of all 33 stamps, if I had done a DPS with that topic, then it would have been a study of something well beyond my own personal collection that has added to the body of knowledge. And I chose not to do that because I wanted to do something new myself, and I guess I should have done. I should have put that one up as an electronic exhibit. So anyway, this is really limited only by your own imagination.
There are no page numbers.
No page numbers, no.
See, David, I actually think...
Oh, see, okay, here's an example where, you know, this icon, which lets me see the other side of this piece, and then go back.
See, David, I think one of the things which comes to mind, I actually disagree with Bob when he refers to this as just a catalog. This is really a synopsis. This is taking what is known about the subject, how the issue was produced, how the issues were used, production, the reality and the usage. This isn't a catalog.
No, it isn't a catalog.
It's really a synopsis.
Yeah.
And that is an important form of philatelic research. I mean, a lot of times we don't digest the material. We just accumulate. We don't actually process, sort, and summarize. I mean, what you've done is you've prepared a very detailed synopsis of what exists.
And more importantly, this is persistent. This now exists in digital form. It's persistent. If I drop dead tomorrow, this is still there. It's not going to be, it can't be dispersed, sold around the world. You know, my life has not been for naught. And I've heard plenty of stories about people who have studied something for 20 and 30 years and dropped dead and never wrote anything. Yes, sir.
All right. That brings up my question. It's persistent. ASTA has... it on their website.
Right.
What's the future of preserving this knowledge?
Yeah, well, I would think it would go to the APRL.
Well, the actual CDs,
yeah,
apart from being given to the individual participants in the digital Philatelic exhibition, copies were also made for the APRL, the Collectors Club Library, so that copies of the CDs will exist in perpetuity at these institutions. And, God willing, so long as the ASDA is still around, it'll continue to be on their website. And
so someone will, as technology changes, maybe CDs are no good in 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The APRL is well on top of keeping up to date.
That's my question.
Yeah, when they decide that CDs are redundant, I'm sure they'll transfer the CDs they have to whatever...
Even more importantly, if you compare this with the APRL asking for copies of exhibits, that
I'd
becomes...
rather have them have electronic copies.
As Fran can verify, you can build an index system on top of these that grows and is dynamic, no problem whatsoever, so that if you ever want to collect Slovenia, you can find this thing lickety-split. You don't have to go to
that's what,
Match Factory and search through stacks of...
And photocopies fade.
Yes.
Photocopies get lost.
Yes.
you know, this, you can replicate the CDs over and over and over. I mean, you know, it really offers.
You could print the CD and the 100th will look just like the first one.
Exactly.
You know, you run off the photocopies and by the third set, they look awful.
And again, I'm not claiming, you know, that this is wonderful. I mean, I'm sure that when Cram gets involved, because I, for a number of personal reasons, I forsook HTML and XML and websites. I don't really care, technically, okay? And I know that there's a lot of good tools there, though, to do this kind of work as well as we did here. And there will be other programs that come along for multimedia, for example, presentations that might even be better than those. So, but the fact is there would always be a migration path. No matter what happens, because of Microsoft, there's always going to be a migration path. So if PowerPoint disappears, whatever it is replaced by will first read PowerPoints and convert them. Otherwise, it won't ever sell. And so it really, generally, that's a reasonably painless, I mean, other than taking some labor, it's a reasonably painless conversion nowadays. It wasn't 30 years ago, believe me.
To exhibit here now, is it somebody who wanted to compete with this send you a CD?
On the handout which I gave you, which I was going to summarize there, there's a handout with an application form which I just gave you. You would complete the application form and by whatever the date is, which I apologize, I just don't immediately remember what the date is, you would submit the CD to the ASDA. They would then supply them to the judges. They would then load them onto the laptops for the exhibition, and then at the end of the exhibition, they would then be loaded onto the ASDA
is this
website.
Is this online somewhere so I can email it to people?
If you go to if you go to the ASDA website, it should be up there. If it's not up there already, it should be up there very soon. And if not, send me an email. I'll gladly email you a copy of it.
Do you have to be ASDA member or ASP?
No, it's A for Apple, S for Sam, D for Dog, A for Apple, online.com.
But do you have to be a member?
No.
Okay.
No, you don't have to be a member of the ASDA. The ASDA is the American Stamp Dealers Association, and they are simply affording us the opportunity to host this and organize it and do everything. I think one of the points which David made, which is really a very, very important point that it's very easy to lose sight of, when most traditional exhibits are put together, they're put together with a tremendous amount of knowledge, a tremendous amount of love, care, and attention. But when that exhibit is finished with, you know, either the exhibitor has passed away or the exhibitor has changed his interests or whatever, all that material by the auction houses or the dealer gets torn off those pages, the pages get thrown in the garbage, and all that that information is lost. I mean, every major auction house is guilty of the destruction of a tremendous amount of photolic information every year. All that material from collectors' collections that's stripped off the pages, not just the exhibits, but the collections themselves, and all those pages that end up in the garbage, all that information that collector has written down is gone. Whether it's plating studies, whether it's postal history, all that information is gone. If you look back at, say you take an international exhibition, say Ameripex in 86, the proportion of exhibits, say from Ameripex in 86, where there is a pictorial record of those exhibits is probably 5% of the exhibits, maybe, if that. That is a reflection of how much information is lost in traditional philatelic exhibiting. The information is transient, it's there, and it's gone. Some of it might get boiled down and an article is written. But a presentation such as this conveys far more information than might ever be in an article.
You're not going to possibly illustrate all of the stuff. Ed's an example, when he put together his Grand Prix collection of Guadeloupe. I mean, that was the greatest assembly of Guadeloupe ever formed. Now, has it been preserved for posterity or is it just gone? And the answer is, Ed was smart enough to save it.
But he only did the fronts.
Huh?
Oh, you did the backs?
No. The latest FCPS, Friends and Colonies Philatelist, has an offer. You can buy a DVD with the scans of each page, 128 pages, and then there are 7 PowerPoint presentations, which include every cover in the exhibit, plus covers not in the exhibit, fronts and backs, and occasional blow-ups of key items.
And what are you charging for that?
I can't remember.
I forget what you're charging, $10?
It might be $10 US, no, it might be $15 US, 10 euros, or £5.
Yeah,
something
yeah, yeah.
Like that.
I'll email you the information.
No, I'm just interested because Canalsund Study Group is doing similar things with the Nautilus, and we're thinking about pricing.
Anyway, going back to the DPS again, there are two other areas that I think it's worth saying a little bit about. And are you going to do more?
I think everybody gets the picture.
Let's put a little bit
light. Any of the other exhibits besides your own?
No, I didn't put them on here.
No, we just pull on.
Let me just make a comment. I mean, I did one too, but much, much simpler than David's. Mine is just a very straight, single-line PowerPoint presentation with some blow-ups.
I was wondering about some of the, if people used HTML or database technologies or anything like that.
No, I think everybody had a simple PDF except myself and Ed. That's my recollection.
I think part of this is to see where the community takes it.
Sure.
Is it searchable? Searchable PDF?
Searchable
PDF? Yeah.
PDF? I don't know that anybody put much link in.
That way it's nice because Google will go out and find it.
Oh, yeah. But no, I don't think many of them put any hyperlinks in their PDFs. Now,
it depends on what version of Adobe you're using.
Yeah, most people don't have the distiller. The testimony to the problem with this is shown by the audience. Hundreds of people here, and this is how many people came to see this.
The average age of the guy here is about 75.
The biggest objection.
Everybody can work eBay.
Well, believe it or not, one of the biggest objections is, but you don't need to own the material. So what?
Hi, May. How are you?
Why can't you do a study of the inverted center 1869s? It's like telling you, gee, if you don't have $1 million to buy them all, you're not allowed to play. And you might have a lot to say. You might be able to figure out things that nobody else had thought about. And why wouldn't you be allowed to do that? That happens in every other form of science, right, Dave? We'd have got nowhere in aerospace engineering if we didn't build on the guys in front of us.
Or you can sit there and plate something.
Yes. Well, you see, if you saw my Laboulin, I determined statistically that there had to be at least three sheets of the invert. It was forensic philately and mathematics.
Okay.
But and I don't own them all. You know, they're 6,000 pounds apiece. I don't have a spare 300,000 pounds to buy them all. And of course, by the time I bought them all, they'd be considerably more expensive than that. And why should I buy them all? I've got the idea. I know what to do with them. I got an idea of what to do. But the purists say, well, you know, if you can't buy it, and in the meantime, I damn well know that exhibitors trade material to each other or have sham transactions in order to show things in their exhibits.
Borrow.
Yes. Or buy for a dollar.
Yeah, you have to buy it.
Dollar option. Yes.
Back.
No, I don't want it 3 months later.
Will.
Yeah. Take
is
it back.
Is this going to be carried forward that there's some type of prize for best website? I think that would really encourage people to
set up. Right now, FIP, I think, has some competition for websites.
Websites could be what, you know.
What? Discontinued.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the greatest website, perhaps, from a catalog point of view, is our friend in L.A., the Hawaii site.
Yes.
Samson Paradise?
Paradise.
Paradise something, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a fantastic website that has everything you need to know about Hawaiian philately. Okay, and again, he doesn't own everything, for
What's
example.
What's
Stamp is something in paradise. Is it Stamps in Paradise or?
Post Office in Paradise.
Postofficeinparadise.com.
Another good one. Now, I think picking up on something where he was making a comment about, you know, there are hundreds of people at this show and basically there are eight of us in this room. If you look at traditional philatelic exhibiting, it is very much a minority sport. If you look at the proportion of people, even serious people who are members of American Philatelic Society or other organizations, very, very few of those people take up exhibiting in the traditional sense. And it's really a very, very small proportion of people who bother to exhibit. And partly this may be because producing a traditional exhibit is bound up with all sorts of problems. There are all sorts of rules, regulations, procedures. Plus, it's a huge amount of work. You know, the ownership question is a significant one. A lot of people might have a really interesting group of material, but they lack certain key pieces. They feel that they can't exhibit in a traditional format. The DPS offers the ability to put forward your knowledge, to present information, I believe, in a much, much more easy fashion than the preparation of a traditional exhibit. Although you reference to the fact the average age of a lot of people who may come to a traditional stamp exhibition, one of the issues which I think we are all faced with is that the world is changing. Today, young people are far more interested in the electronic medium. They're far more interested in doing things on computers, in making scans and doing things visually and electronically, than they are using paper and glue sticks and matting and actually pasting their stuff down and then coming and hanging the pages in the frames. I mean, the old-fashioned way of exhibiting is hugely labor-intensive. It requires a lot of skills that most people don't have, and which clearly, from the proportion of people who exhibit, isn't something that most people find remotely interesting. They're just not interested in participating. They're not interested in doing it.
And to carry that one step further, the philatelic world is in denial. Many of the national shows are in trouble as far as being able to afford to stay in business. Part of that is because the inefficient use of space that the stamp hobby has. For example, I asked Ken Martin, once we had broken the gambling problem of having the stamp show in Atlantic City, I said, well, why don't we do one in Las Vegas? Lots of people would probably come to Las Vegas. Las Vegas has no interest. There is no such thing as a trade show that takes 125,000 square feet that guarantees 2,000 room nights. Las Vegas says 125,000 square feet, cool, 50,000 room nights. That's what that means to them. Because any other show, like the electronics show, the concrete show, or any other show that's entertained in Las Vegas, has thousands upon thousands of attendees staying for 4 and 5 days. You know, so you know, it just mounts up to a huge number of rooms, and the APS goes in, and they're lucky if they... So huge square footage that we use for hard exhibits, that can't stay forever because it'll be priced out of the marketplace. And that, coupled with Colin's observation about the kids are into electronics, shows that we have to move in that direction, okay? And the fact that some of us in here have gray hair say that not all of us don't want to use computers just because we're over 30, or 40 or 50 or 60.
If we look at one of the big issues that, again, the different philatelic organizations have been grappling with is the constant diatribe. How do we get youth involved? How do we get young people involved? How do we get young people involved? It's been a rhetorical question for decades. The answer is you present them with something in a medium that they're familiar with, that they can work with things in a style to which they're accustomed, and that is an electronic digital style. The other thing is by loosening the ownership requirement. I mean, people have always said, well, you know, kids, what can they be put together? What can they put together? You know, they don't have the material, et cetera, et cetera. Again, what we're doing is we're allowing young people whose minds are intuitive, who have, you know, great imagination when it comes to synthesizing material, analyzing material, studying it. We're saying basically, over to you. Here's an opportunity where the traditional bounds that affected you, one, what can you afford to collect? Two, you have to put it together in a traditional way with, you know, sitting down at a desk, cutting your mounts, putting the material on the pages, and so on. We're loosening that bound. Taking again David's argument about, you know, where can APS afford to have its shows? when you move on to the international level, one of the most interesting developments which was taking place independently of when the ASDA and the exhibitions in New York were coming up with the idea of a digital philatelic exhibition. London for 2010 was starting to look at their plans for an international exhibition. Although there's presently two schools of thought as to what should happen in London in 2010, one of these schools of thought, led by David Springbett, who was the organizer and chief executive of the show in 2000, was that, bearing in mind the cost, the astronomical cost of mounting traditional frames and filling them with pages, the costs of commissioners and judges, that there should be an electronic judging of exhibits up to the gold medal level, that the exhibits would be assessed based on CDs. And from that, the gold medal exhibits would be then brought to London, would be mounted in the frames, would be shown, and would then be adjudicated by the jury. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating that that is the right approach, but it is one that is sympathetic to the cost structure that shows are operating under and the reality that the world has changed. I think possibly the last thing that it may be worth talking a little bit about is how are DPSs assessed? Based on our experience from last year, there were really five criteria that DPSs were examined under. The first criteria was that of the selection of the DPS theme, the identification of the subject, its originality, its scope, and its significance. Essentially, these categories don't differ radically from those of a conventional exhibit. I mean, does the subject that the person has chosen have substance? Does it actually warrant study? I mean, there are an awful lot of areas that it's very interesting to collect and to accumulate material, but it really has no intellectual merit whatsoever to study it. Secondly, there's the area of challenge. Is, in fact, the subject that the DPS preparer, has he chosen an area that has been exhaustively studied? Is it an area that there has been numerous handbooks, numerous articles, numerous previous conventional exhibits? Or, in fact, have they chosen an area that, for whatever reason, has never really been studied to any depth or to any extent? Is, in fact, the subject one which, like David's study of the postage dues, and particularly the production aspect, where you have these very complicated sheet structures, that is something that it would be very difficult to present in a traditional way, but which lends itself very well to the electronic medium. You can see the format of the sheets, you can see the combination of the values, and through an electronic study, you can actually show that information very effectively. So really, is the subject one that lends itself to the electronic media? Again, under challenge, there's also the question of, has the person exerted themselves to bring together the salient illustrations that really tell the story? David, in his study, again, of that sheet format, I mean, it's very useful to have a concrete example, but that sheet format is a very good one. He has shown, not only in a sketch, the structure of the sheets, but he's shown the cross-gutter pieces, the Sutenant pairs, the Sutenants and strips where you've got the three-value Sutenant and so on. He has exercised himself to have illustrations of that material. He's exerted himself to an additional extent that he actually owns the pieces as well. And that, again, is something that within a digital philatelic study deserves and does receive credit and acknowledgement.
Or, for example, is the Lavoine study, which is not a DPS at this point. You know, we had to contact people on five continents over a year to find out the information, okay? I mean, nothing comes free.
in philatelic research. I mean, if you're going to do a good job, then you have to exert yourself. You know, if you're going to collect inverted center 1869s, you better have the bucks to do it, or don't bother, okay? Because you can't. But like I said before, the intellectual capacity of people does not necessarily line up with their financial capacity, or their philatelic expertise does not line up with their financial capacity. And why shouldn't they be allowed to play? The even egalitarian field is not done in the manner that the APS is doing it now, but this manner. Because in this manner, everyone would be equal. Because it really doesn't matter if you don't own those million-dollar items. Whereas the APS is trying to create different playing fields to maybe get people to not have to spend any money to get nice awards.
Do you have to declare that you own or don't own?
On here, it's yes. But it's not against you when you don't. Actually, our rep, Ed and I, our problem was we didn't show enough that we didn't own. Because if it were a true digital study, then you would expect that there was material you don't own.
I mean, most traditional exhibitors, if they're honest, have holes in their exhibits. And they do their best to conceal those holes from the judges. Within a DPS,
you can fill them in.
You can fill those in. You can tell the whole story. You don't have to gloss over the things you don't have. You don't have to leave out, well, I can show the 1 cent, the 5 cent, the 10 cent, but you know something? I only have one page of the 15 cent. So let me kind of just skip it, and then we'll carry on with the set.
Well, you know, I hate to keep tooting my own horn, but another example is my Ivory Coast book. Okay, the parcel post stamps of the Ivory Coast have no fewer than 9 uniquities, 9 unique pieces. In 1999 or 2000, I wrote a book about them. Why? Because I love those? Because Pascal Fair in Paris had them all together. I couldn't buy them, but I said, those will never be together again. And so with his help, I went ahead and I wrote the definitive study, which would be a perfect DPS, of those stamps. Not because I owned them or ever expected to own them.
When you do that, more will come out of the woodwork.
They just don't. They don't exist in that field. They don't exist.
Yeah, well,
but
see, they're
if
over.
If they did,
yes, then
they come out.
And you know, in the Labuan case where I published that, in the year it's been 14 months now, none have come out, which is amazing. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. It's all the people that have them in the drawer. The stories are legion about you. Write your exhibit up. Only known blah. And the guy over here goes, I've got 14 of those in my desk drawer, you know?
Yes.
Which may or may not be true, but in a lot of cases it is, because there are hoarders.
Yeah,
there are people that really have found something they love and they hoard it.
I think there's one other aspect to that, and that is how many people who collect Labuan at home, don't exhibit, have actually gone out and bought all the reference material.
Yes.
This is essentially giving them
that reference material. And in my area, you know, I mean, there were some purists about what research is. What is research? Well, I claim that when I have a shelf this long of foreign catalogs in 9 languages, that I'm doing research. And that if I write one article that has taken those 9 languages, so you never have to see Serbo-Croatian, and God help you if you have to see Serbo-Croatian, because all those vowels the Hawaiians have, they took from Serbo-Croatian. So they've got all the vowels, and the Serbs have all the consonants. The point being that not everybody wants to go buy catalogs in 9 languages. Very few people want to buy catalogs in 9 languages. You have to be a real glutton for punishment. So certainly research is to abstract all of that information, just as though it were scientific papers, to abstract the research from Germany and Norway and France into one, you know, here it is in English, guys. Go from here. So, you know, there's lots of different wrinkles. This is just another one, okay? This is another one that solves or addresses a lot of different problems, like the venue for exhibiting, the destruction of philatelic material, the ability to create exhibits that have material you don't own, so that it's a comprehensive story about some philatelic facet or whatever. We'll see where it goes. And again, I'm an outsider. I mean, the New Yorkers had the notion, and I, of course, injected myself because I'm that kind of guy, especially since it was computer-based.
I mean, I think the key thing is, which David's alluding to, none of us knows exactly where this is going to end up. I mean, traditional exhibiting has evolved, you know, over the last 100 years. It's, though certain fundamentals haven't really changed, you know, there have been some changes. This, I think, does offer really a major quantum leap in what people can do. I mean, it's probably the most significant change that has taken place in philatelic study and philatelic research
since
time immemorial. Yeah. AAPE has come up with all these new disciplines and first day covers and display class and all these different things. Really, it's nothing has changed. The criteria are basically still the same. I mean, still on paper. It's still what you can afford. And although, yes, you know, illustrated mail and first day covers may offer the ability to put together an exhibit that might receive a gold medal for a lot less money, at the end of the day, you still have to have the capacity to buy the material. The hurdle of participation in traditional exhibiting is still very high. It's a very high hurdle. This, for the first time, significantly alters the entry requirements. Yes, you have to, and I one has to emphasize the ability to use the electronic medium. You have to be able to use it. If you can't use it, at the end of the day, this probably isn't for you. But there are an awful lot of people out there who are very, very familiar with the electronic medium, who are highly knowledgeable philatelists, who are highly experienced, who don't want to participate in a traditional way. This, I think, significantly makes philatelic study and participating in a digital philatelic exhibition significantly easier.
And frankly, I mean, everybody's going to vote with their feet. They had 19 exhibits last year. Hopefully they get 26 exhibits this year and 31 exhibits next year. If they get 12 exhibits this year and 7 exhibits next year, probably over.
At least if you can point to your work, it's already listed on the website. People have an idea.
And the ironic thing is, if traditional exhibiting that's been around for more than 100 years, you have shows that are struggling to get exhibits. If it were not for a few individuals, those shows can't meet the basic requirement of, what is it, 150 frames. They can't do it. They're not doing it. People are not participating. If they're not participating, something's wrong and something has to change. And I would argue it's not an issue of saying, well, let's have postcards. I think it was actually in this room last time APS had its show, there was a huge debate in this very room about embracing postcards. And I remember Dan Walker saying, well, I don't see what's wrong with postcards.
There are five.
But it's not the salvation.
There are five postcard exhibits on the floor that if you haven't looked at them, go ahead and look at them, because there's a wide range of value there, okay, or of quality. But at the end of the day, it's not about stamp collecting. They've got their own name, Deltiology. I'm on the opposite side of the argument about having them here in the first place, okay? But as a judge, I'm, you know, honor bound to judge everything. And I can judge them. I know the difference between a gold medal exhibit of postcards and a silver medal. Yes, like Colin says, the powers that be are scared to death of the demise of exhibiting. This solves a lot of different problems, the ability to do this. It's cheaper personally for you because you just have to mail a CD somewhere. You don't have to spend $120 for frame fees. You don't have to have insurance for the collection going through the mail or worry about getting gastric distress about it not getting to where it belongs. I mean, all kinds of things. No environmental damage to the stamps. Somebody's going to say, oh, well, scanning is bad. True, scanning's bad too, but you do it once. You don't hang it 3 days at a time, 4 times a year for 10 years and burn your stamps up.
That's are the organizers trying to, I guess your objective is to get the APS to recognize this?
I don't know.
What APS chooses to do is up to them. What CanEdge, the Committee for Accreditation and Judges and Exhibitions, chooses to do,
It's up to them. The American Stamp Dealers Association, with the support of the ASDA mega events in New York, are hugely supported by the U.S. Postal Service. The U.S. Postal Service makes those exhibitions happen. Those shows would not happen without this.
It must be expensive. It's very expensive.
The support of the U.S. Postal Service is crucial in the ASDA being able to host two national shows a year in New York. The ASDA is fully behind the idea of the digital philatelic exhibits. They feel that it's a way forward. They recognize that there's something adrift with exhibiting, that such a huge amount of time, effort, and energy goes into it, and yet there are so few participants. It takes up a huge square footage, it takes up a huge cost at shows in this country. And yet, if you consider what a minority sport it is. I mean, if you flip through Lens and you look at those awards lists from all those shows, and you did a tally of how many names are involved, it's really very few people. And that tells you there's something wrong. And as David says, you know, APS may be worried about what is the future of philatelic exhibiting. I think they have ample cause to be worried about what is the future of philatelic exhibiting. There's very clearly something wrong. When something's wrong, you go to a doctor and you do something. If he says you need to start exercising, you start exercising. Or if he says you need to stop drinking, you stop drinking. And clearly there's a problem. And I think that the day that we all face up to the fact that there's something wrong with exhibiting, we are going to step forward. This is one solution. And if APS at some point throws itself behind it or wants to get involved, the ASDA would be thrilled. You know, they
it
don't.
To me, like this, getting this accepted is—you've already got a foot in the door because they accept the literature.
Yeah, well, this is another method
of putting out a story or a book or a documentation. They accept the literature. Why not accept a digital format?
Change takes a long time to happen.
Digital exhibits now are going online. And the big place is Croatia.
Where is it? Croatia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we kind of missed the boat on digital exhibits, just posting them online. So if nobody else does this, somebody else, well, if
yeah,
we don't
it's
do going it, to
be done.
Somebody
yeah.
else will. So
I think the thing one has to recognize is that straight digital exhibits, scanning a traditional exhibit, is no bigger a change than moving from handwriting to typewriting. It's following the same railway track. What I feel very strongly is that we're at a point where we can actually switch the points and send the train in a different direction. And in sending the train in a different direction, the collective experience, the collective knowledge, and the furtherance of philately will be far greater than just, well, let's scan our exhibits, and instead of having frames, let's have laptops, and we look at a bunch of scanned exhibits. I mean, that is, as I say, it's no more radical a change than going from handwriting to typewriting.
It's the next step.
Yeah.
But what you want to do is you can embellish it.
You know, once it's there in digital format.
Well, yes, I mean, my material
is embellishing it and going
sure.
this way instead of this way.
Sure, well, that's your basis. That's your basis. You own the material, and instead of doing a hard copy exhibit, you maybe do a digital exhibit, or you do both. I mean,
yeah, David could do, from what David has sitting in his cardboard box at home, he can do both.
I mean, I've been doing 20 years of amassing the Yugoslavian stuff that hasn't even been launched as a hard copy exhibit yet. Okay.
But you would be the first to admit that trying to make it a traditional hard copy exhibit perhaps is not as easy as doing it
yeah,
in an electronic form.
And Dave, you actually touched David on something a minute ago, and that's, and Fran, I'm sure you're sympathetic, the publishing of books alone. Should there be books? Why is there a book? Why isn't everything done digitally? Good question. This is still the transitional era of computing, because until, you know, we're about 40 years away from everybody in the society having been raised with computers. So we have like a 30 to 40 more years of this transitional era where it's people saying, oh, but we can't do that because not everybody has a computer. It must be like 1907. Okay, we can't do that because not everybody has a car. What about those horse people? What are we going to do about the poor horse people? Well, eventually it's tough. There's 500 gas stations and one blacksmith. And if you have to get your horse shoed, you've got to get them somehow to the blacksmith because you've lost the war. The horses are gone and the cars are here. And that's the way it is. At some point in that spectrum, you have to bite the bullet. An example is the Indo-Chinese specialty group has gone to their journal being digital. What do you inherit? You inherit full color free. As a member of the society, all you have to do is print what paper you want to print. You don't have to pile them up over in the corner, all those articles that you're never going to look at and could care less about. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, but wait, 20% of the membership doesn't have a computer. They said, the hell with them.
No.
I'm sorry.
If you get a digital subscription, it's $5.
Yes.
And if you get a postal subscription, it's, I think, $20.
Correct. But what they'll do with the postal subscription is they'll just print a PDF, staple it, and send it to you. In other words, they're not doing...
Black and white.
Yeah, in black and white. They're not doing any journal anymore. And that's reasonable. So if you don't have a computer, for $20, you get something. And if you do have a computer, you get a beautiful online, full-color journal.
Searchable
and printable when you want. Thank you, and let's get out of here.
Thank you very much.